ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी। So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 24, entitled Worshipping Govardhan Hill, Text Number 1. So we start a new chapter. Please repeat after me. Shishuka Uvacha Bhagavan Api Tatraiva बलदेवेन संयुतः अपश्यन् निवसन् गोपान् इन्द्रयाग कृतोद्यमान्। श्रीशुक उवाच भगवान् अपि तत्रैव बलदेवेन संयुतः अपश्यन् निवसन् गोपान् इन्द्रयाग कृतोद्यमान्। श्रीशुक उवाच भगवान् अपि तत्रैव बलदेवेन संयुतः अपश्यन् निवसन् गोपान् इन्द्रयाग कृतोद्यमान्। भगवानपि तत्रैव बलदेवेन संयुतः पश्यन् निवसन् गोपान् इन्द्रयाग कृतोद्यमान्। श्रीशुक उवाच भगवानपि तत्रैव बलदेवेन संयुतः अपश्यन् निवसन् गोपान् इन्द्रयाग कृतोद्यमान्। श्रीशुक उवाच भगवानपि तत्रेण बलदेवेन संयुतः अपश्यन् निवसन् गोपान् इन्द्रयाग कृतोद्यमान्। माताजी श्रीशुक उवाच भगवान् अपि तत्रैव बलदेवेन संयुतः अपश्यन् निवसन् गोपान् इन्द्रयाग कृतोद्यमान्। Shishuk Uvacha, Shishukadev Goswami said, Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Api, also, Tatra Eva, in that same place, Baladevena, by Lord Balaram, Samyuta, joined, Apashyat, saw, Nivasan, staying, Gopan, the cowherd men, Indra, for Indra, the king of heaven, Yaga, for the sake of a sacrifice, Krita, making Adhyaman great endeavor. Translation and purport by disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Shukadev Goswami said, while staying in that very place with his brother Baladev, Lord Krishna happened to see the cowherd men busily arranging for a sacrifice to Indra. Purport. According to Srila Sridhar Swami and other acharyas, the words Tatra Eva in this verse indicate that Lord Krishna stayed in the village of the Brahmanas whose wives had satisfied him by their devotion. Thus he gave his mercy to those Brahmanas as well as to their chaste wives who had no one to associate with except their husbands. In that place, the cowherd men headed by Lord Krishna's father Nanda Maharaj were somehow or other preparing an elaborate sacrifice to Lord Indra, and Lord Krishna reacted as follows. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Melitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Gurun Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamsa E Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhuva Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivas Adi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this 10th chapter, we are now entering a different story, episode, another leela of of the Lord. And this is the beginning of the next few chapters, which are actually going to take us through the very famous story of Govardhan Leela. Basically, it is when how Indra's false pride is crushed. That is really the... Actually, every story of the Lord is filled with many purports and conclusions for all of us. That is really the way. It isn't just, of course, it's very pleasing just to hear or to read about, but the most important thing is what we get out of it and how we understand the what is essential for us. So this is going to now probably go on for the next couple of months. So you are going to hear a lot about it. So I'm not going to go into the story back, because you will hear it again. But I would like to talk about the basic conclusion of the essence of this verse and how it applies to us, which is really the unrelenting desire we have for our for recognition, for sense of honor, prestige, pratishtha, which is such a strong inclination for us. It just comes naturally to us, and so much of our happiness is linked to the presence of that or the aspiration of that, and so much of our sadness is due to when we are devoid of it. So there are actually, the Srimad Bhagavatam has so many stories, countless stories, which are really coming to those similar conclusions and giving us very mercifully, very nicely, so many in a very enchanting way, similar conclusion. We can take one about Jad Bharat and Maharaj Raghuguna. Jad Bharat actually was Maharaj Bharat, and then he got attached to the deer, and now we are at a stage where he has, though he was a great personality, because of attachment he took the form of a deer. Now he has come to this birth where he is really a fully realized soul. And we read that in his past birth, though he knew everything, he was deliberately, purposely doing the wrong things at the wrong time, the wrong way. Now here he is very, very extremely careful not to offend anyone, to such an extent that he's living the life of a avadhut. Externally looks like a vagabond, because he has no extra clothes or anything else with him, but he happened to be one of the carriers of the palanquins of Maharaj Raghuguna. And Maharaj Raghuguna is the king of the world. He's also, he's not just an ordinary karmi king. He is also a special person, though of course not fully realized, not to the extent certainly that Jad Bharat was. So he's in the palanquin, and Jad Bharat, with this realization where he doesn't want to, where even an insignificant ant is important to him as much as any other person or creature. So when four people are carrying the palanquin, Jad Bharat, just to avoid, not even, he's so sensitive to even that he would not step onto even one ant, that you can imagine how he would be weaving and waving his way through, and how the palanquin would be unsettled when you have four people and one person is not marching in order. Generally, when you have this, when you have any marches, march past, you see on Republic Day, you see the military. What really impresses us is the unison with everyone does. You see 200 people in a regiment or a battalion, they're walking through, and it's absolutely, you don't even find one thing out of step. Here, four people are carrying, and that too, they're not carrying just any person, it's an emperor. And three people are trying their best to walk in unison, and one person is considered, that doesn't stamp on any ant and so on. So naturally, Maharaj Raghuguna gets upset and he chastises him, and he really shouts at him. But then, Jad Bharat's view, in the beginning, doesn't speak anything. But when he's forced to, and then when he speaks, he actually, then immediately, Maharaj Raghuguna was not an ordinary king. He immediately understands the gravity of his mistake, and he is astonished to find that a person who is just carrying a palanquin just here in front of me hasn't done anything, doesn't look like anybody, that he is actually a great saint, he is an avadhut, he is a fully realized soul. So he, out of his humility, apologizes, and he begs forgiveness. And then he, it's a very nice description of how he speaks so from his heart. And he also admits that it's so difficult to recognize people. You cannot make judgments, because today in this world, we make judgments based on external things. You know, whatever people look like or have done, we give immediately. It comes instinctively because of our conditioning as we've grown up, that we see, if we hear about a person who has done something very special, a new discovery, or he's become a chief minister or a very rich person, he's done something, some material achievement, tangible achievement, immediately for us it's, he's a respectable person. Similarly, if he's done some, somebody has, in our family also, we are very proud to say, if we have, say, two children and one person has done his, undergraduate in Stanford University and then has done his graduate in, say, MIT and then his PhD in Princeton University, we are immediately, proud and saying, when we introduce him, we say, such and such, he's done this and this. And if the other child has just done his BA Arts in National College, you wouldn't necessarily bring that up so much. So so much of our conditioning is, and our value system and our outlook is based on the externals. Someone is living a simple life, materially not very rich. We may not offend him perhaps, but we would certainly consider him as an ordinary person. And someone who's done something really special and done some achievements. And nowadays the value system is such that we don't even care about how a person would have done that. If he has a fleet of, Bentleys and Rolls Royces and Mercedes and so on, we're quite impressed that, this person must have done something. So, these are the realizations one gets when we hear and when we read about Bhagavatam. This is actually the whole sheer purpose of linking where the philosophy can actually help us to implement it in our life. So, here, Maharaj Rahu Guna understands, and on understanding he is extremely apologetic, and that he makes this prophetic statement for all of us, that it's so difficult to judge people, and we constantly make mistakes and we offend people. And Srila Prabhupada would so many times say that, he would warn us that, please do not offend people in our relationships. You don't know who the other person is. You don't know your own children. You don't know your family members. The husband doesn't know his wife. The wife doesn't know the husband. In the sense, we don't know how many lives they've come through. We do hear, and we know for sure that anybody who has taken up an interest in spiritual life certainly has had a whole background of that. Now, whether it is of just one lifetime or many lifetimes, one doesn't know. So, if such a person is there, and we do see that there are so few people who really want to understand and try to see the purpose of life, that these people have done something. So, never mind in this life if they have some fall down, if they have a problem, but in spite of that, they may have a whole history of great devotional service in the past life, or even in this life. There are so many great devotees who have had some difficulty at some point in life later, but have put in decades of fantastic service, and we may not even know anything about it. So, therefore, we will be risking offending, certainly will be offending, it will be a Vaishnava Aparad, because Krishna sees the totality. Krishna sees the history of a devotee. He has the entire perspective in a flash. He understands completely. He's being the Paramatma, as a Paramatma, he is fully understanding the deepest thought process through which this comes out. So, therefore, Prabhupada's warning was very apt that in this, and one very important point we need to remember, it's really, you can say, a kind of, a sutra for us, that if we expect respect, it's almost impossible to give respect to others. It is, this doesn't go together. If we are expecting respect in the heart of hearts, in our actions, in our words, in the way we do, and it may not be moment to moment, but if broadly this is something which is a major aspiration, we want to be recognized for what we are doing, whether even it is in our devotional service, if we are hankering for it, if it's a very important point for us, to the extent that that becomes important for in our life, to that extent we will find it very difficult to give respect. Because actually our outlook and consciousness then is entirely based and focused on what can we do to please the other person so that he recognizes or she recognizes me, and that I feel happier about that. So our happiness is based on the recognition rather than just pleasing for the sake of doing service. So there is a subtle thin line, a subtle difference which we need to see that certainly we do it for, that it is a natural pleasure that comes out of serving others. But if you cross the line and if it is tinged with that expectation that we would be rewarded or we'll be recognized and we want that, you know, we actually want that if it's very important and we act on it. Because the more we want, and sometimes we may actually act on some way where you will want to be recognized. And to that extent we'll find very difficult to respect others. So Srila Prabhupada very often used the word puffed up. Actually, that's the first time I heard about this, because I used to think that puffed up is either for popcorns or for balloons. You know, that's what I used to think. And here Prabhupada would say for human beings, or for our, that, you know, you get too puffed up. But actually it is a very nice analogy, because, a metaphor, because, you know, how a balloon gets really puffed, and you puff and puff and really, you just put hot air in it, and, you know, it becomes bigger and bigger. It can be this much, but it can really, and we pride ourselves, you know, how much we can, lung power we have, and you make it so big. And all it needs is just one small prick and the whole thing is finished in less than a flash of a second. So this is the way, if we get puffed up, meaning if we really get fulfilled thinking of ourselves, and that consumes us, that is so important for us. And the more our life is around that, the more we really feel that a sense of satisfaction and achievement based on this feeling that I'm doing something, I'm recognized, and I'm I'm achieving things, particularly in the from the material point of view. Then Krishna, in the form of Maya, will have, out of sheer compassion for us, will inevitably find ways to put roadblocks and difficulties. And what happens is that when we are achieving, the more we achieve, the more we get used to success, the more difficult it is to accept, or the more intolerant we become, very difficult for us to accept impediments. So that is why people on the, a simple example, like there are so many millions of people who don't have homes in the city of Mumbai, but they don't have difficulty in sleeping. So, but people who have big, you know, living in luxurious homes, they need sleeping pills. You don't sell sleeping pills to the person who's on the road. He's, with all his misery and all his, really impossible life, you know, and living in such difficult conditions. So the state of mind for the person who's achieving a lot, somehow we relate it to the anxiety. We think the anxiety is actually worth it because we are getting something, and that is where this illusion and the sense of importance takes us into that. The Bhagavatam gives a very nice metaphor for that, saying that it's like a camel who's a camel sometimes chews the thorn, and then when it gets tongue gets cut and there's bleeding, so the camel thinks that it is actually a little sweet, not knowing that it is his own blood that is drinking. So it is something like that when we may take up some austerities and difficulties, but if our passion and vision is only for achieving something which is devoid of anything to do with Krishna, and our thinking is only for ourselves, then actually we may accept that, but then sooner or later there will be inevitably challenges in our path. And challenges are for everyone. Whether we take to Krishna consciousness or not, you are going to have challenges. But the ability to face it will become diminished to the extent that we have kept Krishna out of it. So, Prabhupada said that the problem is that, you know, the more we have, the more you want. You can never be satisfied, because it is a subtle lust. This desire that we want is a subtle lust, because lust ultimately means attachment. And this burning desire is, Krishna also says in Bhagavad Gita, that is insatiable. You can't quench it. So it just feeds on itself. The more you have, the more you need. The more you need, the more you'll do anything to get it. So then our life is centered around that. you know. And there is enough environmental challenges, because people, today's world is such that, right from our parents, you know, our parents also are driving us very often, you know, that that becomes the single most goal. The parent, so often, maybe not in all cases, hopefully, but more and more often, where the parents are looking at seeing the how, at 16, 18, 19, whatever, the children are actually groomed towards, you know, going abroad or going to a nice university, doing this. By itself, that is not a problem. But the consciousness that that is the most important goal, if that is driven in the children's mind, then, and if they do get success, which is like a long rope, it's which Krishna gives, we get more entangled, then the ability to face to the real challenges becomes very difficult. And then we may create offenses, create problems for ourselves, and then actually we are wasting this precious human life. So that is why it is said that whatever attributes that are given, actually Queen Kunti in her prayers, she says that it is quite amazing how she says that the attributes that these are the impediments, what she considers impediments to spiritual life, and she prays that she recognizes that these are the impediments, are actually the basis for living for the outside world. That is, you know, attachment to beauty, attachment to you know, the wealth, fame, high birth. These become the most important aspect, and we will see that they, in one way or the other, it, if you see, compared to 20, 30, 40 years for those who are in the older ages, you see, you can see how such a large, vast change has come in the outside environment, that more and more, you know, today, say, it doesn't need much, you know, I mean, just, you don't even need to, it's not a discovery to understand that the attraction for beauty is so strong that that is everywhere we see that, you know, there are so many appeals to it that we should, you know, we have the largest selling, the most profitable companies are generally consumer products companies. The, especially the largest margins of profit are also those which are making these personal products, what they call, which are, you know, primarily related to beauty products, because there is an insatiable demand and people are willing to pay any price for it. In fact, I was told that within the science of medicine, dentistry is quite profitable. But within dentistry also now, in the last 20 years, cosmetic dentistry is in fact extremely profitable, because people are so concerned about, you know, getting their teeth whitened with bleach, and, you know, straightened and so on. Why? Because it's very important how you look. The smile, how you smile, and, you know, everything is centered on, because it's very lucrative. The thing is, for beauty, for fame, for knowledge, for high birth, people, there is a tremendous reward for it. People are able to, for instance, they are the ones who would be given money to for opening shops or for coming to you know, any big wedding programs. Sometimes they get the biggest Bollywood stars to come. They paid huge sums just for one evening. The top stars could get maybe a crore just to come in the evening and shake hands around in the reception. So the if you are famous, and if you are, then you are recognized, you get that money. So therefore it feeds on itself, and then the younger people's aspirations also move towards that. So with the result that room for Krishna, or the reality of life, understanding that this is temporary life and that we are growing older, and we are, what actually is happening to us, how we see our body actually changing, all these thoughts don't even figure in our minds. So I was some months ago, it's very interesting to, I read in the papers, it was on the front page of the international newspapers, that, you know, every year there's a ranking given by a famous magazine called Forbes, which lists the, you know, now there are more than 1,000 billionaires. The billionaire is who having $1,000 million, say about 6,000 crores rupees. So there are more than 1,000 people in the world, maybe 1,200 or 1,300 people who actually have more than 6,000 crores them. So they generally give the top rankings of the top 25 or 30 wealthiest people in the world. So what happened was that this year, in 2012 rankings, which came out a couple of months ago, so apparently they must be going through the various valuations and an estimate, because not everything is in public domain. But one person in the Middle East, you know, he was, he felt extremely offended, and he wrote stinking letters and very strong language, because, you know, he, according to him, his wealth was 29 billion, and the Forbes had rated it at something like 22 billion. So he was dropping in the rankings. So instead of perhaps number 8, he was 12 or 13. It was such an important matter. Now, for any common person to say that, okay, whether somebody estimates my wealth at 22 billion is something like 120,000 crores, or whether it's 140,000. But the fact that you have that, one would say, well, you should be happy with it. But no, the ranking was so important. It was astonishing that it went back and forth, and then he walked away from that award ceremony and whatever. So, one can get a glimpse of, we may think that, you know, he should be so happy. He must be so happy. But actually inside, we don't know how the mind works. If somebody has more, or if somebody gets it wrong, and mistakes, like this is not a, I mean, one never really knows. Even he may not be knowing exactly what his worth is. And probably the stock market changes every day, so you can get poor or rich every day practically. But still, he has, this was absolutely critical for him. And he made it a big issue and went on for several weeks. So, so that is why, coming to our spiritual, among devotees also, we have a lesson when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya actually tells Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu first, when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya first came in touch with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he was still an impersonalist, but he was extremely, he was still a very elderly man, a wise man, a very transcendentalist. So, with his experience and age, he was an elderly person. So, he told Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he could see that he was a sannyasi. So, he warned him that now you are at risk because, you know, because you have taken sannyas, now people will touch your feet, people will give you respect, and then the sannyasi starts feeling that it is for him, and then his spiritual life is ruined. So, this was a basic instruction. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu eventually converts or changes the whole life of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, his consciousness. But at that time, in spite of his being an impersonalist, but he could also sense, and this is basic guidance given, that how challenges are there for everyone. So whatever we have, if we are not sannyasis, but if we have anything, if we see this as important for us, and then eventually, if it is not recognized by others, or if it is misinterpreted, then that becomes very painful for us. Our sensitivity becomes more. Also, you know, if you, even in spiritual life, if we are attached to anything, then it can be very dangerous. And there are some illustrations, stories in the Bhagavatam. One famous one is about Maharaj Priyavrat, who was actually a very great personality who didn't want anything to do with, he had renounced everything and he had gone to the mountains, and only because of the, he was ordered by three very great personalities, Lord Brahma, Narad Muni and Swayambhuva Manu. So he, because they needed him to come and actually rule the world. So he came down from the mountains just on the order of these three. He took up the responsibility, he had a family, and then he did, he was very successful in administering. But over time he got actually attached. And because he got attached, he had some challenges and difficulties. But because he was a very sincere soul, he was protected by the Lord. And he had that humility to pray sincerely to the Lord, that please save me from this. And because of the prayer, then he was saved. But the fact that he also could get attached in spite of leading such an exalted life, and in spite of being recognized by the greatest personalities in the world, that gives shows how much danger there is for all of us. Also, there is the wonderful story of Nalukuvera and Manigriva, where, you know, they were extremely very wealthy, very being connected to Kuvera, the treasurer of the demigods. They were very handsome, very wealthy, very powerful, and so they were arrogant enough to offend Narad Muni. And Narad Muni is the last person to even feel offended, you know. But he was more concerned about them, and rather than letting them, he could see their problem. So if he had just let go and gone away, then these two would have had to face this very serious consequences for a long time. So in order to help them to remove this cancerous growth of, sense of importance in them, he cursed them. And then they were trees, which then they were eventually delivered. But this was actually out of compassion for them. And same way we can see Srila Prabhupada's compassion, and we can see that in a worse situation, because Nalukuvera and Manigriva, actually, we may say that, they were very wealthy, very powerful, very good looking, very attractive to the opposite sex, then I think all the men of this world would probably aspire for that, and they'll be puzzled as to why they are considered to be fallen souls or having a problem. So in today's world, Srila Prabhupada, when he's facing so many Nalukuveras and Manigriva of a very tiny order, that too, but his compassion is such that he has handled the devotees in such a gentle way, but for the same purpose as Narad Muni, trying to remove the internal sense of prestige. And there's one very illustrative story which Jayadvait Maharaj says about one devotee in the mid 60s, one of the earliest devotees, and he was a very special devotee. His name was Rayaram Prabhu, and he had single-handedly, he was in the words of Jayadvait Maharaj, he was so scholarly, and he said he was terrifyingly good in arguments and debates, that any argument on spiritual life, he could, this is in 67, 68, and he could smash anyone down. He was so brilliant. I like the word terrifyingly good. So he could really intimidate anyone and one wouldn't expect that, you know, for somebody who is from the Western world and met Prabhupada within a year or two. And actually today also, more than 20-25 of the top leaders of the ISKCON society actually came from his preaching. He was in charge of the center and university in Buffalo, upstate New York. But then in 1969 he left. And then in 1971 he wrote to Srila Prabhupada and said he wants to come back. And when he, devotees were ecstatic. They were so happy to see, because he was perhaps the most powerful preacher, or let's say impactful preacher that they had seen. And they, so many of these young boys and girls who joined through his preaching in his center there, eventually became GBCs and gurus and sannyasis and all. They're still all very in the highest positions of ISKCON. But when he wrote in 71 and he said, I'd like to come back and, you know, resume my services in the temple, and as he was already the president in some temple. But Prabhupada, when he received the letter, he wrote back that, I'm very happy that you're considering. You should join the temple as just like everyone else, and start doing your regular service. Because everybody stayed in the temple. So you should get up, follow the four regular principles, get up in the morning like everyone else. All that. So basically what Prabhupada wrote is that you should become just like everyone else, leave your independence aside and be entirely like any other disciple who's joined in the temple, dutifully going about your course. And Rayaram Prabhu never came back. So Jayadvait Maharaj said that Prabhupada, even though he never met him again, but he sensed that he wanted to come back in the same same with the same sense of prestige and powerful, because he understood he had done so much for that movement. And Prabhupada was trying to help him by saying that if you come with that mentality, it will be detrimental to you. So in so many words, he just told him to join in a just like a regular brahmachari, and that was not acceptable. So actually he was proved right. So the great personalities, actually they have so much of compassion, but they will do it in a very gentle way. But nevertheless, for whatever he has done, definitely Krishna will not forget that, and he will certainly, it will be a great benefit to his spiritual life sometime. Also, Indra, who is at the center of this story, and it will unravel over the next several weeks, because of his false pride, and he forgets what Krishna's position is. But in the past also, there are so many instances when he makes mistakes. And one was when Vishwamitra Muni he wanted to shake his... the thing is, the underlying current is that when somebody has, even great people, if they have a lot with them, then they feel very insecure when that has that's shaken. So when Vishwamitra Muni was gaining in tremendous power with his sage and wisdom and with his renunciation, so he sent so many, Indra sent so many apsaras to kind of shake his, for trying to get him to fall down. Also in Prithu Maharaj's case, who was an extraordinarily great king, and he was performing yajnas for the welfare of the world, just so that his Ashwamedha yajnas would not be successful, Indra tried his best to break it up. So this stems from that same kind of feeling, that when we have a lot, we actually start seeing the world according to our attachments. See, we see everything, that we feel that what we are attached to, we are so blinded to other things that we feel that this is what everyone wants, and that I have this and others want that, and therefore I need the urge to protect it. So this is what Indra demonstrated as an example for us. We see this with us on a regular basis, in whatever way it is. It may be money, it may be power, it may be our prestige, it may be our control. Sometimes there is, in so many families we see that, practically all families, that there is, the world is changing so fast, and in many ways it is becoming so much more complex and difficult, that, I can identify with it because, we were brought up in the 60s and 70s, and then our children are born in the 80s. So now the children are 25, 30 years old now. Parents find it so difficult to recognize, and they say that the way we did things in our times and the way now, today, things are so different. So, the urge to control is very difficult to let go. So, this is something which is another example in every aspect. So, we need to see where where we come from. We have to always examine it. So, we have to do what we need to do. It doesn't mean that we just close our eyes. But at the same time, we have to see what is within our control, which is very little, and what almost everything else which is not in our control, we can certainly pray, and we can do our best to create an environment. There is also another illustrative story in the Bhagavatam of Lord Balram, and this is just after when the Kurukshetra war was about to start in the Mahabharata, and Lord Balram had a special affection also for Duryodhan. Now that's very complex, but that is it's mystifying in one way, but he was his disciple, and therefore he also had, so he didn't want to take sides, because obviously he couldn't go against the Pandavas. Krishna was with them, and he also had deep love for them. So he attempted to remain neutral, and he went away on holy pilgrimage. So when he went there, when he reached Naimisharanya, so at that time all the great sages had assembled there, and they were having a yajna for the welfare of the world, because this is an impending war. And in the assembly of the greatest sages of the entire world, and that too in the era when the sages were really sages, we had, they chose the highest scholar, the teacher who had to sit on that Vyasasana, and they chose Roma Harshana, who was asked to preside and to address them. And so that was a scene when Lord Balaram came there. So Roma Harshana was very well recognized by all, but when Lord Balaram came, everybody stood up and they paid their obeisances respectfully, except Roma Harshana, because he didn't blaspheme Lord Balaram, but he just didn't feel the need. He didn't feel the need that he had to get up. Now, Lord Balaram, as a Paramatma, he understands, he immediately understood the motive of Roma Harshana. And here, Roma Harshana is supposed to be exemplifying the highest qualities by addressing this assembly of the greatest sages. And he's supposed to be having absolutely no other motive. So Balaramji was very angry, because he detected that the sense of pride and achievement which was in him, a sense of self-worth. So at that time he got extremely upset. And what Balaramji spoke is actually not only very pertinent for us, but I found it quite perturbing also. Lord Balaramji said, although he is a disciple of the divine sage Vyas, that is, Roma Harshana was also the disciple of Vyasdev, that is another quality. Although he is a disciple of the divine sage Vyas and has thoroughly learned the scriptures from his guru, he has thoroughly learned the law books of religious duties, the epic histories and the Puranas, all his study of the scriptures has not produced good qualities in him. Therefore, his study of the scriptures is like an actor studying his part, for he has not developed humility or self-control. I'll just repeat this. He said, all his study of the scriptures has not produced good qualities in him. Therefore, his study of the scriptures is like an actor studying his part, for he has not developed humility or self-control. He presumes himself to be a great scholar, although he has pride and he has not controlled his mind. I have incarnated in this world specially to punish hypocrites who appear as religious leaders. So saying this, he then picked up just one kusha grass and just touched him in the neck, and Roma Harshana fell dead. So we can see here, now again in today's context, today's world, I want to say that, I mean, this is ridiculous, because he didn't even speak anything. Just because he didn't get up, what an overreaction. Somebody can look at it this way, you can perversely make an argument that if you don't accept Balaramji as the supreme personality, you may think Balaramji is on an ego trip, and he used this power to do this. So this is where the guidance and understanding comes. We cannot do it on our own. You cannot do by speculative knowledge. We have to go through a system. Because of our contamination and our anarthas, we see everything in such a light, because we see, identify ourselves and look at it from that point of view. That, poor fellow is such a helpless chap, he didn't get up, all his scriptures and everything has been condemned. One can look at. But for us who can actually, who have understood through the eyes of scriptures and sadhus, we can see the gravity of this, that. And Balaramji is out of his extreme compassion. He's giving us the hope, and he's also giving us the guidance. So how we should go about it. In the same light, if you take Srila Prabhupada, another very nice story. His Holiness Vedanand Maharaj, who's one of the senior most disciples of Srila Prabhupada, once when in the early days, when Prabhupada came to Mexico, so Srila Prabhupada, everyone would, in the early days, they would try to bring as many famous people in those cities to Prabhupada, so that Prabhupada's blessings would be there, and also that way more and more people would know about it, because this kind was hardly known. So the devotees in Mexico managed to get Miss Mexico, one who had just won the crown, Miss Mexico, you know, so they brought her there. Now, those who have gone through that, I mean, generally then there's a whole set of training. They're trained how to speak very politely. They say the right words. You know, it's not just the looks, because when you go through this test, you know, they're also cross-examined and questioned variously, and you're supposed to be able to know how to answer. So she said the right things, everything, in a very polite way. As Hridayanand Maharaj said, you know, she knew how to do so. She was fluttering her eyelids and smiling in the right way, very polite. And then she told Prabhupada that, I liked your books very much and, no, I mean, I liked your lecture very much and I would like to come meet you again. So Prabhupada just, you know, closed his, you know, with half eyes closed, he looked at her and he said, why you want to come again? So she was not used to that question. So he said, he said, have you read my books? She said, no. Say, then why? So, you know, it was not to humiliate anyone, but, you know, he could see through that. He didn't want this superficiality and these niceties. I'll come again, because she had no intention to come again. But this was, and the same Prabhupada, when, you know, there was one, there was a fire sacrifice and some Matajis were pronouncing some women devotees, Westerners. They were not pronouncing the Sanskrit words clearly, and actually they were both, men and women. They were speaking in unison. And Prabhupada's godbrother was there. And he leaned back and he told Prabhupada that they are not able to, this is not correct. So Prabhupada just looked back and said, they are doing fine, they'll learn, it's okay. So see, Prabhupada never went by these, you know, he saw the sincerity. What spiritual life is about, a sincere attempt. It is not the externals, that somebody speaks in the best pronunciation, best language, best tone. That is not important. So any sham will not do, because Krishna sees that. So when we get any lessons or when we get any experiences where we feel a bit down or humiliated or actually caught out or exposed, actually we should take it as a learning experience. And we should be grateful that it happened early on my spiritual quest, so that now at least in future I need not do that. And nobody is expecting that, you know, nobody expects that. So, Krishna consciousness is actually like a razor's edge. It is, you know, one has to be very, very careful. I just end with one story, one example of how Srila Prabhupada, when he was giving initiations to so many devotees, and he got so much criticism, because they said they come from Mlecha family, Yavana families, and how can you give Brahmin initiations to them? They're not deserving of that. Prabhupada just said, I'm following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has personally sent Mlechas and Yavanas in the Western world to take birth so that they can help spread this movement. And then he said, the Namacharya of the holy name, which is universal and non-different than Krishna, was an untouchable in his era, Haridas Thakur. So, therefore, in one statement, Prabhupada brought out not only the significance of the holy name, of course, but his act of initiating and spreading the movement, empowering devotees to carry forward and go ahead fearlessly, was based on just this, that they should have no, we need not worry about the opinions of others. We need to only worry about if we are offending people, and not just devotees. It's not that we don't offend devotees and you can offend your neighbor or your parents or your children or, you know, someone whom you don't like. No, it is an attitude we need to develop. Not that we are perfect, we are all going to make mistakes, we do it regularly. But at least we should feel ashamed of if we have made mistakes. We should know that somehow we need to not repeat it or at least the frequency becomes less initially, and we are acutely aware, you know, we wrestle with her, you know, inside when we made a mistake, that okay, it has come from, because you know your motivation, you know what was in your thought when you have done some act or spoken something. Sometimes it is not even, it is appreciated by all, and you know that actually you are meaning something else and you are misled. So it, at least that conscience should, Krishna's voice should be not be stilled. You know, if we feel that, then sooner or later we'll make amends. Sometimes we have to apologize, sometimes we have to, but we need to do this, because if we don't, then gradually this process of quietening the conscience or the voice which the Paramatma actually guiding us will slowly lead us into feeling that what we are doing is the best, and then that's one way when Maya then takes over, because that is, Maya works very subtly. Krishna's energy works very subtly, and then slowly will gradually make us feel that we are on the right track and that we can justify so many things. So I'll end here. Any questions we have, or any comments? Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. There's one question, sorry. Okay.